Back in the end of April, Phil and Rusty and I went to Honduras to kind of lay the groundwork for the mission trip and kind of get a sense of what needed to be done there and how we could best serve the people there. And in order to get to Honduras, we flew from Dallas to Houston and then Houston on. And on the trip from Dallas to Houston, there was an empty seat between me and Rusty. Brian was going to go, and then he couldn't, and so that seat was open. And when we sat down, there was a young lady that sat between us. And so we kind of kidded with her that was supposed to be Rusty's brother's seat, so we would just consider her Rusty's brother. And we got into a conversation, and I was thrilled to hear her story because God has done some amazing things in her life. And as she told her story and as we talked some more, it became very clear to me that she needed to come and share her story with you guys. I want you to hear Christina Toto as she tells us some of the ways that God has worked in her life. And the reason I've asked her to do this is because we're learning this summer to tell your story, give God glory. Remember, when we tell our story, it's nothing to be ashamed of. It's nothing to be embarrassed about. There's no reason to think, oh, I have to be, humble and I don't want to talk about myself, because your goal is to give God glory. So you tell your story not for attention, but you tell your story so that God can get the glory for the work that He's doing. You know, it'd be a shame for us to experience great blessings from God and to see how great He is and then not tell anybody about it. This way we give Him glory when we tell our story. Christina has agreed to do that. Christina, come and tell us your story. Thank you so much for being here and being a part of our worship time this morning. Phil's got a mic there for you.
Okay, so how many of y'all think it's weird to meet somebody on a plane and then and then somehow they end up over here in front of y'all? Yeah, okay. Well, you know, some of my family members probably think it was weird, but I tend to be one of those people. I love to meet new people. And when Rusty started talking to me, I was like, oh, I'm not going to sleep on a plane today. We're going to talk. We're going to get to know each other. But it's a good thing because I love people. So it was fine for me, you know, get to meet somebody new and get to hear all the wonderful stories that he told me about his father and everything else. But I'm here today because I want to show you guys just how incredible God is. And just to kind of show y'all that we really are human, we make a lot of mistakes, and I have had my fair share of mistakes. But before I clue you guys in on my story, I'm going to tell y'all all the good things about me. So then, you know, later you won't have to try to differentiate between those two. But I'm Christina. I'm the oldest of five. My family, I was born in Sudan. And we came to the United States when I was about 8 or 9. I can't ever remember exactly, but I just remember I was old enough to know the difference. So our family, there's 5 kids total, and we have a brother. I call him a brother, but he's really a cousin. He was raised with us pretty much. His name's Joseph, and I may say a few names here and there. I just want to let you know that if I do go over time, I apologize, but I'm gonna do the best I can to try to wrap everything up together. So I'm a little bit nervous too. So I really am. So we were all raised together. I've been one of those people. I have experienced the most amazing parts of life. And also the worst parts of life. Currently, I am an employee for Ernst & Young. How many of you know what Ernst & Young is, who, what they do? Okay, so it's a consulting firm, really great, lovely. I travel for work. It sounds glamorous, but after 2 months, you get tired of it. But I love my job. I help people in the healthcare industry. I help businesses, you know, go about their world and continue to help people. I'm involved at a church at Prestonwood Baptist, and I love to teach little kids. I have a heart for kids, and you'll learn that later. And I also have a heart for young girls, because whenever I was young, I had an amazing woman that came into my life that mentored me that you guys will hear about later. So that's a little bit about who I am. I'm a woman that loves God, and I do the best I can to live to honor him. Sometimes that doesn't look perfect, but the most important thing is that you continue to keep going, right? Okay, so now that I've told y'all a little bit about myself, I'm going to tell y'all where I came from. So, Sudan. Anybody know Sudan? You guys call it Sudan. Yeah, that's how y'all call it. But for me, I call it Sudan because that is my home. Yeah, that I just totally switched there. That's an accent. That's how my parents talk at home. I don't talk like that, but I can. I have the ability to. So the country is now two countries. The north is mostly Arab. The south is mostly African. I have lived there, and we moved from there to Kenya. We lived in Kenya for a little bit, and from Kenya, we went to Uganda. Now, when we were in Sudan, we lived pretty nicely. We had a huge mansion, because it's usually like a family unit. Everybody lives together. And we had servants even, people that would wait on us. I was a child. I didn't know any better. I just lived my life. In Kenya, things were a little different. We had to start kind of realizing that reality was going to hit. And when we moved to Uganda, reality hit real hard and real quick. We went from a regular home to a village. So I became one of these beautiful little girls that went to school with her uniform to a girl who didn't have hair, who looked like a boy, no nail polish, nothing, barely any shoes, living in a hut. Yes, a mud hut. No door, just a sheet that was the door, pretty much, to our house. We slept on these, I don't even know how to explain it now. I just remember how it feels, and my body did not like it. And it definitely wouldn't like it now. Because I love my Tempur-Pedic bed. Great investment. But yeah, so that's what we did. There were times when we didn't have food. Dad would be out in the city trying to get as much money or some kind of resources to bring back to his family. Mom was constantly dealing with raising kids and trying to keep her children alive. Several of us came to near-death experiences, including myself. I was stung by a bee, or I can't remember what it was, but I blew up like a balloon, and I was pretty much about to die, and I don't know how I lived. I just know I'm here now. But I remember that so vividly because I would touch my face, and it felt like air. There was air inside of me. It was really interesting. So life wasn't really, it wasn't great. And the truth is, if we had stayed there, the likelihood of us all surviving would have been slim to none. And so while my father's in the city, he had an opportunity, two golden opportunities that were presented to him. Now, my dad's a very, very smart, intelligent man, very hardworking, love him. So he had two opportunities. One was that he could come to the United States to bring his whole family, or two, he could go to England to study at Oxford. Well, because he's a smart guy, he wanted to go to Oxford. And most men, most African men, African people in general, education is like the one thing. You don't mess around with education. So he wanted to do that. Well, my mother was like, absolutely not. You are not going anywhere. If you leave me and these children here, there will be no family for you to come back to. So we are going to go to America. We're going to take all these kids, and you are going to give them an opportunity to survive. And so that's what we did. We came here. Landed in Dallas, Texas, in a very interesting community that I don't even want to talk about. But we lived in this apartment. It was so neat because they brought us in, they gave us an apartment, they helped my dad get a job, they put us on our feet pretty much. But the kids, we didn't know how to speak English, we didn't know how to read, we didn't know how to write, none of that. Now I'm like 8 or 9, so I have to pick up. And I don't know about y'all, how your experience was in elementary school, but kids tend to be a little mean, like really mean. So especially when you don't know how to read, they're really mean. So I'm trying to go through my ESL classes, learning this language, learning this new world, and it was hard. And I think that's really where my story truly began, because from the insecurities that I was feeling, the comfort, I didn't have a comfort level because it wasn't my comfort. I was new to a place. I didn't know these people. I'd never seen white people in my life. Like, I was on a plane. It was a complete shock to me. You know, one of the things that really got me was the flight attendants. They, you know, they looked really nice, and they had these stockings, right? So their legs were black. Okay. And then the rest of their body was white. I'm going to tell y'all a lot of things like this. I had no clue. I was like, Daddy, are there people that are two colors? Like, is that possible? He just looked at me, and he didn't even say anything. Later, I found out that there are actually such things called stockings, and they can be different colors. So that's one interesting thing. So I'm new to this country, new people, et cetera. Also, I thought we were eating trees on a plane because they served me broccoli. I'd never seen broccoli in my life. But so now I'm, you know, learning these things and trying to learn a language and deal with just living. And it's hard because the one thing about the United States is there's a culture here, right? There's a different culture in this country than there is in African, country. And my parents were raising me at home in this African culture. However, I was living in an American society, in an American culture. My friends were Americans. I didn't really interact with Africans, so there was a huge clash there. And so I'm really going to school, and I'm having a really hard time in school trying to just be a kid. And I'm coming home, and I'm having an even harder time because when I came home, I was expected to cook, I was expected to clean, I was expected to get the kids together, ready for bed, because mom and dad worked all the time. I was the mother. I kind of took that place because I was the oldest daughter. And so I never had a childhood. When we would go out to the pool, I was always expected to stay home to take care of things while the kids could hang out. So I was deprived of that childhood, so I may be a little childish. I'm trying to make up for it. But so that's really how my life started, was kind of dealing with that. I knew the one thing that made my parents happy, the one thing that I could get attention from them that would make me feel like I'm alive, like, oh, you know, they actually noticed me, was school. So I worked hard in school. You know, in only 2 years, I mastered the English language. Like, I learned it, I could speak it, I could write it. Before I knew it, I actually started liking it. And so so that, you know, that was great. And at that time, when we first got here, a lot of the kids, we all knew several languages. I think I knew at that time total 7 languages counting. Now it's not like that anymore. But it was just a hard situation. And so going through school, I'm trying to adjust. I'm still trying to learn. And I'm going into middle school, and I'm still trying to fit in. I don't know exactly how to fit in. One of the things that really made me feel like I wasn't a beautiful woman, I wasn't loved or anything, was also the fact that I was made fun of because of my skin. You know, I tend to be a bit more darker than normal African Americans, just because I come from a really hot country. I mean, what do you expect? You know, the sun is always on me. Like, what am I supposed to do? So I can't change that. And I didn't realize how beautiful I was. And so when people would make fun of me, oh my God, you're so dark, like, it hit, like it hurt. And I couldn't go home and talk to my mom about it. I couldn't go home and talk to anybody about it. I had to deal with all these pain and the hurt inside. Early on in our life, my father met somebody at church, at his work actually, that invited him to First Baptist Church Carrollton. And so one of the great things my dad did was to take his family to church. And while I was at this church, this is where I met one of the most incredible women in my life. And her name is Jan Yant. If you ever run into a woman named Jan Yant, just give her a hug. You know, tell her Christina told me to give you a hug. She'll probably look at you and be like, wait. But She's a wonderful woman. I met her, and she has become my friend, my mother, my sister, my everything I can imagine. My first movie, American movie, Spirit. I don't know if y'all remember the horse movie. Yeah, that was my first movie ever. You know, she took me. My first shopping trip, she took me. My first nail polish. Yeah. And now I get my nails done all the time. You know, she did that. Like, so many things she did. She took me in. She loved me. She accepted me for who I was. And she continued over the years to remind me who I am in Christ. Many times I've fallen short of reminding myself, but she was always there. She was always there. When I was crying, she was there. When I was going through things, she was there. So living in Dallas, going through all of this, eventually my family, my parents decided to buy a house in Little Elm. Well, it was kind of a life shock because I had finally worked so hard enough to be popular, okay? Like, I was in middle school, I was in eighth grade, and I had busted my butt to be popular. I was the girl. Like, you just can't take that from someone that has worked so hard. But no, they were like, nope, we're moving. And I'm like, wait, what? In the middle of eighth grade? Like, I had a plan, you know? Like, there's this guy that I like. He's going to ask me out, too. Why are you moving me? So, can't control that. We move. And I decide when we moved to this new world again, Little Elm, Texas, that I was done. I was done trying to live towards people's expectations. I wasn't high school, of course, not high school, but just like school in reference to school. I was done trying to seek my peers' attention, be the popular girl. I just didn't care anymore. I was just going to go to school, and I was going to do that. The first day was horrible. I did not like it at all. And when I went home, I just started crying. And I remember crying and just being hurt. My entire world has just changed. And my mother walks into my room and she says, if you don't stop crying, I'm going to ship you back to Africa. That's how they solve problems, by the way. If a child is not acting right, they ship you off to Africa. I don't know how that solves a problem, but it put enough fear in me to realize that I couldn't speak about things. I used to be a writer. I would write poems all the time, and I was actually really good at it. My parents found it one time and read it, and because it explained certain feelings and stuff, they burned it. I had many different outlets over the years that it just didn't work out. So it's either my parents came in the way or somehow it just that person wasn't there. But Jan Yount always stuck around. She was always there. So I'm in high school now, or I'm in middle school now. We're moving to this new place, and I'm trying to adjust to life. My little brother was born when I was a freshman, and I was actually mad when my mother told me that she was pregnant because I knew exactly what that meant. That meant that I pretty much inherited a child, and that's what it was. I inherited a child. I had to take care of Joel. It got to the point where when this child was two, he refused to sleep in my parents' room. He would just be in my room, in my bed, keeping me up all night, talking while I'm trying to sleep so I could go to school the next day. I love that kid to death. He's my baby, you know. Over the years, I've supported him. He's my baby. But I feel like the process of having Joel really moved me into the next stage of my life where I had to take on more responsibility as a child or as a young girl. And as a result, I'm now trying to discover myself. I'm in church, but I'm not really in church. Like, I'm not in God. I'm in church, but I'm not in God. I'm not seeing God. I'm not understanding it. I forgot to tell you guys the most important thing. I'm sorry, I'm jumping around. But when I was in seventh grade, that's really when I decided to accept the Lord, was church camp. And I remember that day because I was going through all this trying to find my identity, trying to find who I was. And that church camp was just the moment when the Lord spoke to me through the pastor to let me know, honey, I love you. You are my daughter. I don't care what you deal with at home, who is messing with you, what kind of situations you're going through, you are mine. And when I realized that, all I did was cry. I didn't have any other response. I just cried because I finally realized what it meant that Jesus died on the cross for you. And so I just cried. So I accepted the Lord at that time. But I think over the years, my faith was always countered by all these struggles that I went through. And so it was a back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, moving, dealing with home life, dealing with parents, dealing with friends, dealing with all kinds of things. And I was always on a journey, always and always, always on a journey of trying to find love, acceptance, security, and my identity. All of those things, it took me years. It's still taking me years to sometimes find, to try to really iron it out. Living in the house in Little Elm with my parents for those 4 years when I went through high school was one of the toughest things that I had ever experienced. Because when you're coming home and you don't have the support at home and you're having to be this adult, you become lonely. You become lonely, and that loneliness leads you to make other decisions, to find love somewhere else. So where do girls usually find love when they're looking for it? Boys. Boys, boys, boys. And so I went to the wrong outlet. And that led me to starting to date this guy in high school that was a nice guy, but my parents didn't really like it. Because they're African. You don't date outside of your tribe. You don't date outside of anything. And you actually don't date, period. You live in your parents' home. You live there. You stay as a little girl. And then you don't leave the house until you're given to a man. A man has to come and take you. And that's just how it happened. But living in an American society, every girl likes to kind of have a crush here and there, you know? Maybe feel like they're a girl. And so kind of moving into that state where I was trying to discover myself, my parents and I started having more of a clash, so my life went more into like an abusive state now. One of the biggest differences that I've noticed from the African culture to the American culture is that there is this huge divide between man and woman. A woman, a young woman like myself, has no say-so on her life. Almost to the point where my parents allowed me to be abused by Joseph, this brother, cousin, person that I told you guys about. And there's this point in time when they actually allowed him to just beat me. And I couldn't understand why. Joseph was upset because I had stood up to myself for something, and he was just beating me that night. The only person that came to my rescue was my grandmother. And so that situation, and then just over the years, seeing men constantly abuse or put their hands on me, including my father, has put me into the state of just really, really disliking men. Like, I told myself I would never submit to any man. I would never put myself, I just don't even care. So I went from listening to what God said about submission to just complete hatred. I had hatred for the culture. I had hatred for men. I had hatred for everything that I was, you know, that I came from, this African culture. I wanted to erase all of it. I just wanted to be by myself. I wanted to get through high school. I had a horrible relationship with my mom. I couldn't communicate with my parents. And I was still trying to find myself, find love, find all these things. And it just wasn't working. I was making all the wrong decisions, trying to chase all the wrong things that were already there. It was already there. I just couldn't see it. So trying to get out of college, the one thing I knew that was working, that would seek people, that would make my parents happy, was school. So I worked hard. I graduated. I went to college. I was still dating this guy that was probably not a good idea, but I didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. I thought, this is just what it's going to be. This is my life. And college brought a whole new genre of discovering Christina. I was finally out of this home that kept me just under these chains. And now I was out in the open, and I had to make decisions for myself as an adult. I had to truly discover myself. I knew that I needed to go to a college that was a Christian college, or else the likelihood of me going south was very high. So when I was looking for schools, every school I picked was a Christian private school. Baylor, Howard Payne, Hardin Simmons, all of those schools. And the one person that showed up was my godmother. She made sure I got into college. She made sure we visited every college that I wanted to. She took me on a girls trip, y'all. We had a real good time driving through nowhere. Kind of like me getting here, you know. It was a lot of fun. She took me to all these colleges. We visited all the colleges, and I ended up picking Howard Payne because the Lord spoke to me when I got to there on that campus. I knew it was evident that I needed to be at that school. I was sold on Baylor, but he said, nope, I want you here. So I went there, and over the years, I stayed there. I went through a whole lot of things, a whole lot of ups and downs, still trying to discover myself, but he took me through it. Out of that opportunity, he gave me an opportunity to go to Oxford and to study abroad and to experience a different world and to just see how life was. Throughout everything that all the major changes in my life, God was clearly there. He helped me. Not only did he help me, but he opened the opportunity. Not ever did I think that I, you know, a little old girl that came from Africa could end up in an incredible school where I had to learn to love libraries because they literally live there, you know? Like, they have to live there and go to school. You know, it was a different thing for me. So the Lord took me from Howard Payne to Oxford to here. That journey wasn't easy. I had to learn time and time again who he was. And so now I'm going to kind of share to you guys a little bit about some of the bad decisions I have made that God has turned around and made into a story that someday I hope changes people. I mentioned dating this guy in high school. Well, this relationship lasted all the way through college. Well, not all the way through college, but definitely to sophomore year of my college year. I didn't care who was in my life. I just cared that there was somebody there. And I was willing to do anything and everything to have somebody there. And so I allowed Aaron to be in my life. And I did things that were very ungodly with Aaron. Things that led to me being pregnant. And out of fear of the status and the name that I was destroying from, according to my parents, the fear of being this disappointment, this useless girl, I had an abortion. I covered it up. I covered it up because I remembered my dad dropping me off to college and saying, "You're not going to make it. You're not going to make it." I remembered that, and I was like, "He's right. I am nothing. I can't allow this to be my life. Like, I can't. I was selfish. I thought about me, and I thought about the name of my family from my parents' perspective that I was destroying, and I decided that I mattered more to me than my own child's life. And so I kept secrets, and I hid the information from him. I befriended a person that was an atheist because I knew with him I could not be judged, that he would just accept what I was doing. He wouldn't even question it. He'd just be like, "Yeah, whatever. I don't care." I thought that it was the right thing to do. And I was in that hospital, and I was about to go in, and the Lord was telling me, "No, don't do this. This is not the plan I have for you. Do not do this." And I took that voice and hid it. And I went in anyways. And when I came back out, I lost myself. That moment, I lost myself. 2 days later, I ended up in the hospital. I was in Brownwood. I haven't told anybody, no friends, no mother, no father, nobody knew, not even my own godmother, not even Jan. Nobody knew. It was my secret, and I was keeping it. God said, no, you're not going to keep the secret. So he had me in the hospital. I wasn't doing very well. And Lexi Cheney, the lady that I worked with at the university office, she came to the hospital. She was like, Christina, what's going on? Are you okay? I wouldn't say anything. I was like, I'm fine. I'll be fine. The doctor walks in, and doctor said, started talking. And then Lexi's like, no, it's okay. I can be in here. You can talk to her. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to say, no, Lexi, get out. Because I didn't have anybody else. But I also didn't want her to know. And I knew that the doctor would reveal it. That was the moment that I had to really, truly break down. I broke down. And somebody, for the first time in my life, knew what I had done for me, my selfishness. I had taken a life for my selfishness. And so I had to suffer. I had to go through that. I had to really heal. I had to ask for forgiveness. I had to mourn. I had to mourn because I took a life. I took my own child's life. And I kept it a secret. I kept it from everybody. And it hurt because I didn't realize how bad it was. And I thought I was over it. I thought that this was where it was going to stop. That from that point, I was going to change. I was going to be different. And so I dedicated my life again to God. And I tried to move forward. I left Aaron. I moved on. I forgave myself. The Lord forgave me. I lived a different life. I started loving. I started getting into Christ more. And then the next guy came, and I fell in love. Still trying to find this journey of acceptance. Daniel was my best friend, and we were engaged. He was the love of my life. We had done things the right way. We hadn't done anything. And when that ring went on the finger, I said, nope, it's it. It's going to happen. I know it. So I made another mistake. But this time, I was not going to make the mistake I made before. I was going to walk through that day, that line. I was going to live my life. I was going to love on my child. I was going to love on my husband. I was going to keep doing the right thing, even though I messed up. But God said, nope. That's not the story I have for you. I was pregnant again, and I had a beautiful baby that I was so excited to come into this world. When I told my mother, she looked at me. She said, you're pathetic. You're a disgrace. I said, that's okay, Mom. I'm still going to live my life. I'm still going to love this kid. I'm still going to do the right thing because I made the decision, and I was wrong, but I'm going to do it. Daniel and I were going to get married. And then I ended up in a hospital. And I had a miscarriage. And so now, I start mourning again. Because this is number two. And I'm not mourning for just this child. I'm mourning for the first one. Because I can't understand why I wanted this kid so much. And I didn't want the other one. I couldn't understand that. And I couldn't get over it. I was angry at myself because I realized that if I can have a miscarriage now, then I could probably have millions of miscarriages later, and I would never have an opportunity to be a mom because I didn't deserve it. I had that once, and I took it away. And to make matters worse, a week later, my fiancé leaves me. He just flat out says, I'm not in love with you. My whole world changes. I'm out of college. I have a degree, three of them. I'm working on my way to get a job. I was engaged. I was going to have this family. Life was actually supposed to be on its path, right? Like, that's what you're supposed to do when you graduate. You're supposed to find a husband and get married and have kids. Nothing was working right. It wasn't working. It's not working according to my plan. And I was upset. I was so angry. But that losing that child broke me once again, and I had nothing. I had nothing. The only thing, the only person that could pick me up was God. And that moment for me was when I decided that
His plan is just better. I've tried to live my life making it my plan, and I've failed. I have failed. I have hurt people. I've hurt myself. I've sinned, and I've messed up. So I rededicated my life, found Preston Wood Baptist Church, got involved in a young singles ministry. And I just lived my life. I ran into people here and there and relationships here and there, but I stuck. I stuck to the truth. I said, absolutely not. I know my worth. I know my worth, and I may not be perfect, but I know God died for me. And I know that right there is huge. Like, that is huge. I decided to be, from this point on, if I met anybody, it would be abstinence. I would wait till the right time. The Lord has to be very clear that this is the right person for me. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to throw myself at anything. I'm not going to rush at anything. I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait, and I'm going to wait. So I lived my life, and I dedicated myself to Christ. And I continued to face things at home with my family, but none of that mattered because that was just a character building. The story that I had to tell, the story that I have, that I want to relay to you guys, is the fact that the Lord can take your bad and ugly decisions and turn it into something good. I was so afraid to share my testimony. I had never shared my testimony to this many people. This is my first time in the world to ever do this. I shared my testimony with a few friends. One of them was a young woman that I met at Oxford who got pregnant and was trying to get rid of her child. And I was like, don't you do it. It is not worth it. Take it from somebody who's been there, done that, gone through it. If I could go back, I would raise my kid by myself. I don't care. Like, I would have done it. Don't do it. And so I realized this is not really my story. It's God's story. It's a story he wants to use to stop other young girls from making my decision, other young girls from thinking they're not beautiful. You are beautiful. You are. You know how beautiful you are? You're beautiful enough for the Lord to die on the cross for. That's how beautiful you are. And if any guy can't realize that, honey, he is not worth your time. He's just not. All the struggles that I've been through with friends, with family, with relationships, has made me the person I am today. I mentioned how much I love kids. A lot of that is because of what I've been through. I see these little ones, and I think, my goodness, you could grow up to be this incredible person that just touches so many lives. How dare we take that away from God's plan, you know? He creates that. He tries to manifest that. And so I sit here before you guys today, not a perfect person. I've been abused. I've been hurt. I've been exiled in some ways. I've been just put aside. I've been unnoticed. I felt useless. I felt unloved. I felt just worthless. But in all of that, God stands up for me. He stands up for me. And he says, I don't care. Don't worry about them. It's me and you. Let's live this life together. You pay attention to me. And all these little things, they'll line up. And y'all, believe it or not, it does line up. Since I've changed my life 2 years ago and really started living for the Lord, I have an amazing job with a good salary that helps me pay for these student loans that I've incurred. I can stand on my own 2 feet because I have for so long. I have been on my own, but I can stand on my own two feet. God has provided for me. I can sit here and talk to people, help people, encourage them, say, don't do what I did. Don't do that. He's too good. He's too big. He's too powerful. There isn't anything he can do. Anything. Whatever your struggles are, your circumstances are so small to his ability to change and move things. I mean, I met these people on the plane, y'all. Met them on the plane. So my advice to you, listen to God. Live for his glory and his glory only. Because at the end of the day, that's what you have to hold on to. So thank you guys for helping me share this.
Thank you, Christina. We appreciate so much you sharing your story with us, sharing your heart. It's so good to hear that God has a plan. Even when we get out of step and mess it up, God is bigger than that. And he has a plan for every life.